supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia's district attorney is expected to appear in court tomorrow after authorities with the FBI and IRS delivered a 23-count indictment against him today. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, federal officials say Seth Williams traded on his name for his own financial gain.
Prosecutors like to say that justice is not for sale. But federal prosecutors say for Seth Williams, it was.
An all-inclusive vacation to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, worth about $6,300. A custom sofa, worth about $3,200. A $500 dinner at a local restaurant. And other expensive things.
That's U.S. Attorney William Fitzpatrick describing some of the things Williams allegedly was given in exchange for what the feds call official acts. They said Williams tried to help someone beat a criminal case after getting a gift, and that he also appointed someone as a DA advisor. Williams is further accused of trying to help a businessman more easily slide past airport security. Then there's another component to the indictment. Again, Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Williams is charged with defrauding an area nursing home and other individuals by diverting funds that were intended to be used for the care of a relative and taking and using that money for his own personal benefit.
The charging documents say Williams pocketed an unidentified relative's pension and Social Security money, which was supposed to be sent to the nursing home. Williams hasn't publicly addressed the charges yet, and his office won't say whether he plans to step down. He's not running for re-election in May, but under Pennsylvania law, he technically can stay in office until he's sentenced, and that's if he's convicted at trial. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Meanwhile, the race to succeed Williams as district attorney is heating up with the primary less than 2 months away. In the latest in our series of interviews with the crowded Democratic field, WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies talks with civil rights attorney and district attorney candidate Larry Krasner.
Well, Larry Krasner, welcome to NewsWorks Tonight. Tell us about your background, your parents, your education, how you got here.
Parents' education? Okay, well, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. My parents were really good people, real smart people, didn't make a ton of money. I went to public schools. I went to college and law school on a pile of loans. Came out of Stanford Law School in 1987, along with a woman who's now my wife and has been for quite some time. And the two of us moved to Philadelphia to be civil rights lawyers, and that is essentially what we did. She became a judge about 16, 17 years ago in Philadelphia, and I have plugged ahead doing criminal defense and civil rights for poor people, championing their issues as best I could, and having a whale of a good time.
Okay. Candidates for DA are typically former prosecutors. You're not. Why are you the right fit for this job?
Because I'm not a former prosecutor. The problem is that the DA's office in Philadelphia especially, but nationwide, they've gone the wrong direction for a very long time. And that is why we have mass incarceration. That's why we have 35 kids in a public school classroom rather than 22 or maybe even 17. We are dumping all of our money into things that do not make us safer and are unjust. For example, with mass incarceration, you have this ridiculous level. We have more people in jail than any other country. And yet you have a homicide rate in 2014 in Philadelphia that was the highest among the 10 major cities. So, the bottom line is we need to change the direction we're going.
Okay, let's be specific. What are some specific things you would change in the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office?
Okay, first of all, I would change the culture of viewing this as a sports event. And that culture is that we're going to charge the highest charge possible. We're going to bring every case possible. And then when we get a conviction on something, if we do, we're going to try to get the longest sentence possible. That mentality may elect DAs to higher office, governor, mayor, whatever, and that's frankly why it's been followed for so many years, because a certain portion of the population can be swayed by fear, and they can be swayed by notions of vengeance and sort of retributive, excessive sentencing. But the problem is the chickens have come home to roost, and now we have prisons that are full, and we have public schools that are empty. So we have to change that.
Ton of drug cases coming into the system, and a lot of people say we have to divert them to treatment. How would that work, and are the resources there to treat people?
Well, anytime you have a shift from one way of doing things, and the war on drugs was basically a way to be as punitive as possible, and really disregarded treatment for a very long time. Anytime you have a shift, you're going to have to build an infrastructure that's going to allow you to get there. No different with moving from, you know, gasoline-powered cars to electric cars. You have to have a shift. Gas station got to become an electric gas station. It's just how it is. So we have that problem as well when you try to move from a system that has been so punitive towards one that is more directed at the long-term good of society, which means you try to rehabilitate people and help them rebuild their lives. What would it mean? It would mean a system that is somewhat similar to Washington, D.C. and other systems, where you have grassroots organizations that provide day centers or weekly centers to deal with the issues that seem to be coinciding with contact with police. For example, drug addiction. For example, mental illness. For example, homelessness. For example, lack of job skills. And rather than charging those folks cash bail, which many poor people cannot pay, which means the taxpayers pay a ton more, what you would do is you would require sort of a sweat bail. They have to, it's sweat equity. They have to go to the day center. They have to comply with the treatment there, et cetera, as a way of staying out of jail and frankly earning that money that they couldn't pay. But it means you're dealing with the issue up front. You're not holding somebody in a jail cell until you convict them, give them a felony conviction, make them unemployable, and then give them treatment. You know, it doesn't break the cycle of poverty. It doesn't break the cycle of addiction to make someone unemployable where that's unnecessary to do so.
What's your view of the death penalty?
I would never seek it. Interestingly enough, there is a prosecutor in Florida who just announced yesterday that she would never seek the death penalty, that she, like me, examined the issue and she sees it for what it is. It's basically a fraudulent policy that is so expensive that it destroys other much more capable ways of making us safe.
When I've talked to people about you, they say Larry Krasner is hardworking, he's committed, he's principled. He can be a little, abrasive, maybe not the most likable person. I wonder if you think that's true and if it matters.
I think it's true. You know, honestly, I think it's true. I have a very direct style. I am really very upfront about what I think. And the culture in politics of let's all get along, and Mr. Hitler has a nice mustache, is not my culture. I mean, I think you have to be willing to speak truth to power. And the people who I admire in direct action, the people who I admire in protest, the people who have changed society have been willing to speak truth to power. I'm abrasive when I find it necessary. I mean, that's a fair statement, and that's why I'm owning up to it, because it's the truth. But that doesn't mean I'm abrasive to people who are doing the right thing. I am a huge fan of people who are doing the right thing, which is why I have defended protesters, activists, and organizers who've done things like arrest the AIDS plague. We used to have an AIDS plague, and the people I represented arrested it. You know, I have represented all sorts of other people pursuing worthy causes, ending gun violence, and so on. And I truly admire them. So, no, I don't think those people will tell you I'm abrasive. I think they'll tell you that I did what was necessary to do the right thing.
Larry Krasner, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure.
Larry Krasner, candidate for Philadelphia District Attorney, speaking with WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. You can hear interviews with others running for the office at newsworks.org. The attempted bribery trial of Chester County businessman Richard Ireland continues this week in federal court in Harrisburg. That's where former Pennsylvania Treasurer Rob McCord yesterday completed 3 days of testimony as a witness for the prosecution. On hand at the court proceedings and joining me with an update is Craig McCoy, Philadelphia Inquirer staff writer. Craig, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Tell us about Richard Ireland, who's been a major political donor on the scene for decades.
Yeah, Richard Ireland is a multimillionaire who lives in Chester County, and for decades he's been an active player in the world of pay-to-play politics. He gives generously to politicians, primarily local politicians, primarily Republicans, but not exclusively. And in return, he tries to win contracts for financial firms that invest the public's money.
That you've used the term pay to play, is that by definition illegal?
And that's what the trial will hinge on. Only it's when it crosses the line, and the issue for the jury will be whether Ireland crossed the line here, and the defense is arguing he did not, obviously. I mean, if you're making campaign contributions, the argument goes for access or even for ideological reasons, obviously that's fine. But if you're trying to get an explicit quid pro quo of campaign contributions in for contracts out, then that in effect is a form of bribery.
Seems like a fine line between pay to play and quid pro quo. Nonetheless, Ireland has worked as what's described as a finder, a kind of super salesman. Describe that job description.
That's correct. I mean, he's in a interesting niche. He basically works the political circuit. He gets to know politicians, and he then fronts for financial firms, investment houses, under a series of SEC regulations that have been growing ever tighter in the last 10 or 15 years. Financiers typically are banned from giving campaign contributions. So under this dodge, he represents the financiers, and he gives the money. And then he typically took as much as 50% of their fees year after year once the firms landed a contract.
He certainly got to know Rob McCord. What was the nature of their relationship that specifically got McCord in trouble?
McCord, of course, was a Democrat. And so in this case, Ireland kind of crossed party lines because most of his dealings had been with the Republican Party. But in this case, he became a significant donor to McCord, who was a Democrat. Now, McCord, meanwhile, has pleaded guilty in a completely different case in which he admitted that he tried to shake down potential donors and threaten them with a loss of their business if they didn't give to his campaign for governor. He's not charged with shaking down Ireland. And indeed, what happened was after the feds confronted him with his crimes, he agreed to wear a recording device and he taped Ireland. And so that's why he becomes the chief witness against Ireland. But McCord himself is charged in a different crime.
More complicated still, this is kind of a two-way tale of the tape, whereby John Esty, a former chief of staff to former Pennsylvania Governor Rendell, was secretly taping McCord.
That's right. I mean, it was Esty who really was the first one to get caught by the FBI and agree to cooperate, and he started the dominoes falling. So the flow of this would be the FBI caught John Esty, who was a lobbyist and a former top Democrat. Esty, in turn, taped McCord, and then McCord taped Ireland.
Can we leave Pennsylvania voters with something good? Joe Torsello, the Democrat elected treasurer last November, has banned any firms that use so-called finders. Is that window dressing, or can that actually go away toward limiting this kind of collusion?
Well, I think it's legitimate and an important step. The firms, they want the business, obviously, of the treasurer, and several of them have already contacted Torsello's office and announced that they've severed the ties with their finders. More significantly, as I mentioned, the SEC had banned campaign donations by financial professionals nationwide some years back. That ban is going to be extended to finders in the fall. So the finder profession is about to go the way of the dinosaurs.
And for those keeping score, there is even another player, Barbara Hafer, the Republican who switched parties to become a Democrat. Her trial is expected to get underway in June. Review the charges.
Yeah, I mean, sort of an ancillary fallout of the McCord in Ireland case was that when the feds dug into it, they discovered that Ireland, 15 years ago, had put Hafer on his payroll after she stepped down as treasurer. And this is after she had greatly expanded the amount of work given to a firm that at that time Ireland actually had a direct financial interest in. Presumably, this action of putting her on the payroll, if it was a crime, was outside of the statute of limitations because it took place 15 years ago. But when the FBI went to her to talk to her, they trapped her and asked her about this, and she said that she'd never received such payments. And so that now she's facing perjury charges for that.
Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Glad to be here.
Inquirer staff writer Craig McCoy. Voters in a North Philadelphia State House district are casting ballots in an unusual special election today. The two previous representatives of the district left after corruption convictions, and the Democratic candidate for the special election was tossed from the race after a judge found he didn't live in the district. That left Republican Lucinda Little as the only candidate on the ballot in the heavily Democratic district. She says because the GOP controls the legislature in Harrisburg, voters are smart to choose her.
You know, I'll be sitting on committees and caucuses that are with the Republicans, so I'll be able to actually be in the majority to get things done.
Little's victory isn't assured, though. The Democratic and Green parties are waging write-in campaigns for their candidates. A high school student near Pottstown, Pennsylvania, is suing his district because it allowed a transgender student to change in the boys' locker room. The student claims the Boyertown Area School District violated his right to privacy. Details from WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
The plaintiff in this case is an 11th grade male at Boyertown Area Senior High School. His attorneys say late last year he saw a student wearing a bra changing in the boys' locker room. The student wearing the bra was born female but identifies as male, according to attorneys. The plaintiff's lawyer, Kelly Fedoric, says her client has been skipping gym class ever since.
Students from all walks of life find it deeply humiliating and offensive to be forced to share these facilities with members of the opposite sex. These voices must be heard, and today we stand for them.
The 11th grader claims that by allowing the transgender student to use the boys' locker room, Boyertown Area School District violated his constitutional right to privacy. One of the student's other attorneys, Randall Wenger, says the school district's actions also constitute sexual harassment under Title IX.
To tell someone that they need to share the locker room with somebody of the opposite sex and make it natural amounts to sexual harassment.
The school district says it hasn't received a formal complaint yet and has no further comment. There are a lot of issues the courts haven't decided yet when it comes to transgender students in school, and that means it's fertile ground for lawsuits. Earlier this month, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a case out of Virginia that involved a transgender student pressing to use the bathroom consistent with his gender identity. The Supremes sent that case back down to the lower court for further review. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
After both sides touted infrastructure spending as a rallying cry in the 2016 presidential election, President Donald Trump's 2018 budget calls for less money for agencies that build infrastructure, like the Department of Transportation. Underground, another kind of infrastructure, is crumbling in Pennsylvania, and it will cost tens of billions of dollars to fix. WHYY's Laura Benshoff reports that wastewater treatment plants have to choose between doing nothing and getting fined or finding money to fix old systems.
You might think the way people go to the bathroom doesn't change all that much over time. On a recent visit to Morrisville's treatment plant in Lower Bucks County, plant superintendent Richard Dulay says the advent of so-called flushable wipes has created new headaches.
Everybody throws in these baby wipes and things like that, and they're supposed to be degradable. Well, they're really not.
A couple of years ago, the plant had to install a special screen to filter them out, retrofitting a building from the 1950s. Around the rest of the treatment plant, motors chugged away, pumping the murky liquid through a series of strains and building-sized tanks that gradually distill out unwanted elements. Dulay says wipes and other stuff people stick down their drains is just one factor driving repairs. The biggest one is age.
It was originally built in the 50s, and it has been modified every 20 years or so. But in many cases, they've left the 50s technology here, and nobody would ever build one of those again.
Executive Director John Warenda points out a low concrete building where steel shafts turn partially treated wastewater inside large tanks. The top of the building is bolted down and wasn't opened for a long time, he says.
It became so full of sludge that we actually broke one of these stainless steel shafts. I mean, that's how thick the stuff was.
He later pulls out a picture of what resembles a half-ton hair clog. That buildup meant the plant didn't function as it was supposed to, landing at a $50,000 fine from the State Department of Environmental Protection. Wastewater treatment authorities like this one oversee two interconnected systems, the pipes that carry wastewater to the plant and the plants themselves. Aging infrastructure is a problem for both halves.
We have pipes in some of the older communities that are also vitrified clay, sometimes called terracotta. I mean, vitrified clay piping dates back to the Roman Empire days.
That's Michael DeSantis, Director of Operations and Maintenance at Delcora, which manages wastewater in eastern Delaware County. His plant was fined nearly $700,000 in 2015 for combined sewer overflows, stemming from those old pipes. Stormwater from the street and wastewater from homes get transported in one big underground trough. Heavy rains overload the pipes, which then discharge untreated sewage and stormwater into local rivers. Pennsylvania has more combined sewer overflows than any other state, according to the Pennsylvania Municipal Authorities Association. Jen Fields is an environmental program manager with the DEP, and she says one common theme for environmental permit violations is infrastructure repair.
It's just over time. There's only so many times you can band-aid a system before you realize that if you don't take that next step and do an upgrade, you're going to have some sort of a catastrophe.
Wastewater authorities have to keep doing what they've been doing with aging plants while finding ways to keep up with changing human behavior and contemplating upgrades. Warenda says he's hoping to build a new $120 million plant in Lower Bucks County in the next few years. In the meantime, the old plant has added a new filtration system with some components that might look at home in your living room.
That's a $3.5 million project right there. You're going to see $3 million worth of blue rugs, basically.
Is that what the technology looks like?
It looks like it, yeah. Huh.
A state loan and grant program called PennVest doles out millions to plants around the Commonwealth each year, but the amounts fall far short of total need. John Brocious, director of the Pennsylvania Municipal Authorities Association, says the number one complaint he hears from members is cost.
Then you're turning around and you have to put that in your ratepayers' bills, and that becomes kind of a very expensive price tag for a lot of these smaller communities.
They also have to anticipate the future, its potential for stricter regulations and new customers. In 2014, the American Society of Civil Engineers estimated Pennsylvania will need to invest $28 billion in wastewater upgrades over the next 20 years. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benshoff.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.